This is VOA News. I'm Michael Brown reporting. The administration of U.S. President Donald Trump is resisting growing domestic and international calls for it to ground a new American-made jetliner that has crashed twice in 6 months, killing nearly 350 people. Officials from Boeing, the maker of the 737 MAX 8 aircraft, said Trump was reassured Tuesday by the company's chief executive officer that the aircraft is safe. But some U.S. lawmakers, including Utah Senator Mitt Romney, believe the dozens of 737 MAX 8s in service in the U.S. should at least be temporarily grounded.
Well, I think out of an abundance of caution and, frankly, common sense, it makes sense to ground aircraft that's been involved in two very tragic accidents in only 6 months.
Two labor unions representing flight attendants have also added their voices to the calls for temporarily halting commercial use of the 737 MAX 8 jetliner. The first aircraft crashed in the Java Sea last year in Indonesia, killing 189 on board. This past Sunday, another 737 MAX 8 went down shortly after takeoff from Addis Ababa, killing 157 on board. The airline said the flight data and cockpit voice recorders of the Ethiopian Flight 302 have been recovered. Famous Hollywood parents, college coaches, test proctors, and a college administrator among 50 people indicted in the United States, what prosecutors are calling the largest college admission scam ever prosecuted by the U.S. Justice Department. Prosecutors say students were admitted into highly competitive elite schools after their parents allegedly paid William Rick Singer to arrange fake tests, fake credentials, and fake athletic accomplishment. One FBI official said they flaunted their wealth, sparing no expense, so they could get their children up for success. This is VOA News. British lawmakers will vote again Wednesday on whether to leave the European Union a day after rejecting Prime Minister Theresa May's latest effort to set the terms of Britain's Brexit deal to split the European Union from the European Union, that is, on March 29th.
The danger for those of us who want to deliver, to have faith with the British public and deliver on their vote for Brexit, if this deal is not passed, then Brexit could be lost.
Jeremy Corbyn, the leader of Britain's main opposition Labour Party, told the parliamentarians the Prime Minister has run down the clock and the clock has run out on her. He called for a new election. The most senior Catholic to be convicted of child sex abuse is heading to prison for up to 6 years for molesting two choir boys in Melbourne's cathedral more than 20 years ago. The Victoria State County Chief Judge, that's Peter Kidd, on Wednesday ordered Cardinal George Pell to serve a minimum of 3 years and 8 months before he's eligible for parole. Pope Francis, former finance minister, had been convicted by unanimous jury verdict back in December. The 77-year-old denies the allegations and will appeal his convictions in the Victoria Court of Appeals in June. The U.S. Special Envoy for Policy in Venezuela says the Trump administration will announce very significant sanctions on Venezuela this week. Elliot Abrams spoke after Secretary of State Mike Pompeo announced the U.S. is closing down its embassy in Caracas and bringing all remaining diplomatic personnel home. Pompeo said the decision reflects the deteriorating situation in Venezuela. Meantime, opposition leader and self-declared president Juan Guaido is denying the allegations he was involved in the disruption of electrical service in the country. Guaido says government corruption and mismanagement are the cause. The United States denies the president's claim that the U.S. cyber attack on a hydroelectric dam cut off power to nearly the entire country. And Israeli police close Jerusalem's most sensitive holy site, revered by Jews and Muslims, after a firebomb was thrown at a police station on the compound. All worshippers were evacuated from the compound. Police said it would reopen to all worshippers and visitors on Wednesday. And the U.S. and the Taliban reached a draft agreement on the withdrawal of foreign troops from Afghanistan in return for preventing Afghan soil from being used as a hub for terrorism. Both Taliban and American negotiators say they will reconvene soon on a mutually agreed date to build on the progress following 16 days of talks in Qatar. For more news, join us at voanews.com. From here in Washington, I'm Michael Brown reporting.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bati, Washington. Today's Wednesday, March 13th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. There are growing calls to ground the Boeing 737 MAX 8 plane following Sunday's crash in Ethiopia.
I think it makes sense to ground the aircraft until we have better information.
That's U.S. Republican Senator Mitt Romney of Utah. A U.N. panel says the democratic space in Burundi is shrinking. Cameroon reports an influx of refugees from Central African Republic as peace talks fail. A U.S. diplomat to discuss South Africa's support for Venezuela's embattled President Maduro. And South Africa offers to help revive Zimbabwe's collapsing economy.
No one is going to invest in a country where you're not sure if the next government, the next morning, is going to be headed by the current military general, and whether or not that military general would then be in a position to honor all the international agreements that would have been made.
Nkululeko Sibanda is the spokesman for Zimbabwe opposition leader Nelson Chamisa. An increase in security makes it difficult to reach internally displaced people in Burkina Faso. And the Trump administration has been sued for its plan to terminate a program for Liberian immigrants. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The number of countries calling for the grounding of the Boeing 737 MAX 8 jetliner is growing following Sunday's deadly crash in Ethiopia. Those countries include China, Turkey, Indonesia, Brazil, South Korea, and the entire European Union. Other countries include Australia, India, and Singapore. They have also barred flights of the aircraft. As VOA's White House Bureau Chief Steve Herman reports, pressure is mounting on the administration of President Donald Trump to do the same.
Several U.S. senators are calling for the Federal Aviation Administration to order an immediate temporary grounding of the MAX 8 jet. Among them, Republican Senator Mitt Romney of Utah.
I think it makes sense to ground the aircraft until we have better information.
White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders says the U.S. government is in the early stages of its investigation into the jet's second crash in Ethiopia, which on Sunday killed all 157 people on board. President Trump on Twitter on Tuesday complained, "Airplanes are becoming far too complex to fly," but he did not call for grounding the MAX 8, which has a unique computerized anti-stall system. Steve Herman, VOA News, at the White House.
U.S. Deputy Secretary of State John J. Sullivan visits South Africa and Angola this week to discuss a range of issues, including trade and anti-corruption efforts, according to the top U.S. diplomat in Africa, Thibault Nag. Although Nag described most of the discussion topics as positive, he also offered criticism of South Africa's support of Venezuela's embattled President Nicolas Maduro. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
Hope and enthusiasm for Africa have been a consistent theme since Thibault Nag took over as U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs late last year. But the self-described Afro-optimist, who spent more than two decades posted on the continent, hit a snag when describing a new U.S. disagreement with longtime ally South Africa over Venezuela's contentious power struggle. Last month, South Africa was one of three members of the United Nations Security Council, along with Russia and China, to vote against a U.S. resolution calling for the recognition of opposition leader Juan Guaido as Venezuela's interim president. Nag said he was disappointed by South Africa's move and expects Sullivan to make that clear during meetings with South African officials.
What Maduro is doing to Venezuela is, I mean, in my view, it's literally a crime. And interim president Guaido is offering a solution. He's been out empowered by the National Assembly. And why countries cannot come together to see that? For me, that is, in effect, very puzzling, and I'm absolutely certain that that will be a topic of discussion.
In its statement on the vote, South Africa said the U.S. resolution reflected a serious bias and partiality which goes against South Africa's constitution and foreign policy, as well as the letter and spirit of the Charter of the United Nations. Nag did not elaborate on consequences if South Africa doesn't come around, although he noted that Sullivan will also be discussing trade in meetings with officials. Sullivan, who began his week-long tour Tuesday, will also visit Angola. Naj praised Angolan President João Lourenço's efforts to stamp out corruption in an oil-rich nation that was notorious for it during the rule of Lourenço's predecessor, José Eduardo dos Santos.
I think all observers have been absolutely pleasantly, delightfully surprised by what President Lourenço and his government have been doing. We absolutely support his efforts to fight corruption. We know that there's a long way to go, because that has been one of the perennial complaints from American investors. And as you know, one of our top line goals in Africa is to increase American trade and investment so that there's not just, few investors going there. So we are absolutely delighted. We will work with the Angolan government. We will be as supportive as possible, and we will do our best to bring even more trade and investment to Angola.
Naj also said U.S. officials expect South Africa to agree to its request to extradite former Mozambican finance minister Manuel Chang for trial. Chang, arrested last year in South Africa on a U.S. warrant, faces charges in the U.S. for his alleged role in a $2 billion debt scandal that has wrought economic chaos in Mozambique. Naj pointed out that South Africa signed an extradition treaty with the U.S. 20 years ago.
We expect in such arrangements that both parties will honor that treaty, so we are very much expecting that that will happen.
Both the U.S. and Mozambique are trying to extradite Chang, and a Johannesburg court is handling both competing requests. Chang's lawyers say he would rather go to Mozambique. Critics of Mozambique's government say they suspect a Mozambican court will go easier on Chang than an American court would. Naj is midway through a four-nation tour that includes Uganda, Rwanda, the Democratic Republic of Congo, and Cameroon. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
South Africa has offered to help revive Zimbabwe's collapsing economy, but within South Africa's means, this comes as Zimbabwe's economy is suffering from shortages of fuel, drugs, and food. South African President Cyril Ramaphosa was in Harare on Tuesday to meet with Zimbabwe President Emmerson Mnangagwa. In a statement, the two leaders said they were increasing a standing credit facility between their central banks. Also Tuesday, South Africa presented to Zimbabwe a humanitarian package containing medical and school supplies as a gift from the people of South Africa. Nkululeko Sibanda, a spokesman for Zimbabwe opposition leader Nelson Chamisa.
It is very clear that President Ramaphosa understands that South Africa does not have the luxury of bailing out another country. South Africa has a lot of people within its boundaries that require a lot of government investment, and there isn't that extra money. But also that President Ramaphosa understands that the desperate Zimbabwean president may not be in a position to be useful to him economically if you were to give him any money. There will be no business going to South Africa coming out of Zimbabwe.
What do you expect that President Ramaphosa would take home? One would think that his offer is in the vein of an African brother helping an African brother.
Well, look, President Ramaphosa, I think, is going to take nothing home. He's going to take hope, and he's going to take moments with him, and he's going to take a few pictures with him. But he's certainly not going to take much, because Zimbabwe has very little to offer. And Zimbabwe will have very little to offer until you have stopped the scourge of corruption, until you have dealt with the problems of its political instability, the problems of a military government. Look, no one is going to invest in a country where you're not sure if the next government, the next morning, is going to be headed by the current military general, and whether or not that military general would then be in a position to honor all the international agreements that would have been made.
Again, President Ramaphosa once again talked about the need for the international sanctions against Zimbabwe to be lifted.
Look, the fact of the matter is that the only real sanctions against the people of Zimbabwe are those that are placed on them by the government of ZANU-PF, as led by Emmerson Mnangagwa and previously by Mugabe. Where over 40 years, Zimbabweans have not known true freedom in order to be entrepreneurial, in order to be able to succeed. You can't carry out business without having to pay a bribe to someone or having to know someone. You are killing ingenuity. You are killing creativity. You are killing the economy by consistently and continuously running a government that is not committed to democracy, fairness, and that will not help those who work extra hard in order to step forward.
The South Africa Minister for International Relations and Cooperation, Lindiwe Sisulu, was also in Zimbabwe, where she gave to Zimbabwe some kind of humanitarian assistance. containing medical supplies, schools, stationery, and other immediate personal needs as a gift from the people of South Africa to the people of Zimbabwe?
Well, look, this is embarrassing to start with. You can't have a country that is a government and is not at war, has not faced tsunami or some kind of natural disaster, and is getting assistance from neighboring countries in the form of what they can't use or what they can spare. It simply is, in my view, a confirmation of what President Nelson Chamisa has been saying all along, that our government is not run appropriately and our government needs to improve and needs to be changed.
Nkululeko Sibanda is the spokesman for Zimbabwe opposition leader Nelson Chamisa. He spoke with me from the capital, Harare. Today's Wednesday, March 13th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Daybreak Africa time, 16 minutes past the hour. A UN panel says the democratic space in Burundi is shrinking. Lisa Schlein reports.
In a report presented to the UN Human Rights Council on Tuesday, the Commission expressed regret at Burundi's recent closure of the UN Human Rights Office after a 23-year presence in that country. The Commission of Inquiry remains the only international mechanism for monitoring Burundi's human rights situation. The report notes that Burundi has told all foreign non-governmental organizations to re-register and submit a list of their employees mentioning their ethnicity, this to see if they are complying with a new quota system of 60% Hutu, 40% Tutsi, and a minimum of 30% women. Commission member Françoise Hampson says some NGOs have declared they would leave the country rather than comply with conditions that are contrary to their values.
This continual shrinking of the democratic space, which also affects national NGOs, human rights defenders, and independent media in Burundi, is all the more of concern as it is coming in the light of the elections of 2020.
The commissioners say the political crisis that erupted in 2015 when Nkurunziza ran for a controversial third term has not been resolved. They fear this will have serious ramifications in 2020. They say they have reports that members of the opposition are being threatened, intimidated, arrested, or eliminated. Burundi's ambassador to the UN in Geneva, Renovat Tabu, poured scorn on the members of the commission, calling them mercenary tools of the radical opposition in his country. He dismissed their report as being full of lies, libel, a mess of insults, and politicized statements. At the end of his diatribe, the president of the Human Rights Council reprimanded the ambassador, telling him to refrain from personal attacks and to speak in mutual respect. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Cameroon says there has been an influx of refugees from the Central African Republic, the CAR, after several armed militias in the CAR rejected the president's new cabinet as not representative enough, sparking fears of renewed fighting. The UN Refugee Agency, or UNHCR, is trying to take care of them. Moki Edwin Kizeka reports from Cameroon's eastern border town of Batua.
It is a busy morning at the Garabulai Health Center. The center receives an average of 30 patients daily, but this Tuesday it has reached 70 people. Nurse Luka Mvondo says a majority of them are children from the CAR who need rest after covering long distances on foot.
Tout est gratuit, tout jusqu'au carnet. Le malade a juste besoin.
He says all sick refugees who submit their UNHCR identification cards are treated free of charge as per an agreement between the governments of Cameroon and the United Nations. The government of Cameroon says hundreds of returning and new refugees have crossed over from the CAR since March 5, when armed groups blocked a road in the western CAR to show their dissatisfaction with a new cabinet formed by President Faustin Archange Touadéra. Only 6 of the 14 armed groups that signed a peace and national reconciliation accord in Khartoum on February 6 are represented in the cabinet. One group, the Central African People's Democratic Front accused the president of failing to comply with the Khartoum Peace Agreement, which they say requires an all-inclusive government with representatives from all armed groups that signed the deal. Ngabeye Bashiru fled to Cameroon because he says there are conflicts in the making unless President Touadéra quickly corrects his errors.
Remercier le gouvernement camerounais pour ce que nous sommes en train de voir.
He says he is very grateful the people and the government of Cameroon have received him and his two children. He says he is particularly happy because his children have been admitted in school so they can have their education and secure their future. Jacques Boyer, the UNHCR resident representative in Cameroon, says the refugees are being taken care of despite the limited resources that are available.
Au vu de la situation, certes, nous devions, là où c'était nécessaire, continuer.
He says, besides providing humanitarian assistance to the refugees fleeing to safety, as fear continues to grip CAR residents, the UNHCR has to reinforce the resilience of the host populations so they are able to handle the different economic, social, and environmental shocks. The CAR has been wrecked by fighting since rebels overthrew President Francois Bozizé in March 2013. The UN reports that in 2018, 650,000 Central Africans were internally displaced and 546,000 were refugees in neighboring countries, with more than 300,000 in Cameroon. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News. Garoua Boulaye, Eastern Cameroon.
There are more than 115,000 internally displaced people in Burkina Faso, and rising insecurity in the country is making it difficult to reach those who need aid, according to a United Nations Refugee Agency statement this week. Yola Kimyashi, the head of the agency's Burkina Faso office, spoke to Ricky Shryak about the challenges and the needs in the country where a violent insurgency continues to spread.
Aid agencies like UNHCR has two offices in the Sahel region, but we're the only one who have some 40 staff. Some NGOs have also some presence, but most of the UN agencies are not there. And mainly the Soum province of the Sahel is daily attacks. And it's very, very difficult to bring aid and even for our staff to be able to deliver aid.
According to UNHCR, more than 90% of those displaced are living with host communities. So I imagine inability to get the aid to the IDPs or the refugees doesn't just hurt them. It also hurts the host communities who are probably giving and sharing what they have with these people.
That's correct. So it's very, very limited, the access, because of the explosive on the that they put on the road, and the, as I said, the daily attacks. So the communities are actually receiving very little by the Croix Rouge Burkinabé whenever they have access, or through the government whenever they have access as well. We have delivered some shelter in one of the communities where displaced people have found refuge. But most of the people are unable we are unable to access directly, including some 10,000 refugees. But those ones come during the food distribution. They usually come to take their food in the camps and go back.
Mm. Have you seen the area that is inaccessible expand recently? Has your area that you've been able to reach gotten smaller, I guess?
Yes, actually, the population that used to live in the border area is coming down towards the center. And just in the town of Djibo, there are at least 35,000 displaced who are living with the host population. More than 1,100 schools are closed, and the administration has left.
What would you like to see happen from the international community?
I mean, first of all, to be able to have a humanitarian access, at least at the main roads, because as of today, there are a lot of problems even reaching our field office. And one of our camps where there are at least 7,000 refugees. So if we can ensure the security, then the aid will come as well. For the time being, we are only able to give aid to those that we can access. And UNHCR is conducting a shelter training to the government in order to be able to go themselves back to their communities and give shelter to the host population to be able to accept more displaced and live in better conditions, because currently the situation is really very unbearable.
That was Ioli Kimyashi, the head of the United Nations Refugee Agency in Burkina Faso. She was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Dakar. The administration of U.S. President Donald Trump has been sued in U.S. courts for its decision to terminate humanitarian protection and relief for Liberian immigrants here in the United States. The administration announced last year that it would terminate the Deferred Enforcement Departure, known as the DED, on March 31, 2019, because the situation in Liberia had improved. An estimated 4,000 people will be impacted if the decision goes into effect. The lawsuit was filed in Boston. Amaha Kasa is the executive director of African Communities Together, one of the groups that filed the lawsuit.
This is an essential program that provides humanitarian protection to Liberian immigrants. Most of them have been living in the U.S. for decades. And this is a program done under the authority of the president. And the law does give the president discretion over this program, but that discretion does not include discretion to discriminate. And based on the practice of discriminatory statements and actions by this administration and by the differences between how this program has been extended under both Democratic and Republican presidents for decades, we are charging the administration with illegal discrimination against Liberian DED holders. And we're asking the courts to put the termination of DED on hold.
So the termination date is March 31st, 2019, is that correct?
Yes. If nothing is done, then as of March 31st, 2019, potentially thousands of Liberian DED holders in this country will lose their legal status. They will lose their ability to work and study legally in this country and will face the threat of imminent deportation.
What's the likelihood, Amaha, that the courts will take your argument? Because the last time I followed this, the Trump administration was saying there is no need for people on DED to continue to remain in the United States because situation in Liberia has gotten better.
Well, we think that the statement that Liberia has improved to the point where it could absorb thousands of returning nationals to its country flies against the facts and the evidence on the ground from Liberian sources, from U.S. sources. And we think that we can make out a strong case for illegal discrimination. We think statements by this administration using slurs that I can't repeat against African countries and expressing clear bias against African.
Amaha Kasa is the executive director of African Communities Together. He was speaking with me from New York. And that is it for this Wednesday, March 13th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Greg Burns, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing you a very good day.
Want to relax, unwind, or charge up? Then listen to Music Time in Africa this weekend. It'll do all that for you and more. I'm Heather Maxwell. I know good music. And Africa is my passion. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for 1 hour of commercial-free Pan-African music of the highest caliber. You get great music, music news, and amazing artist interviews from rising stars to superstars. This listen will take you places. So do it. Join me for Music Time in Africa, your weekend destination.